Tonight's guest first came to my attention hosting the evening session in Northern Ireland in the early 2000s. Since then, he's had a varied career in sports and music broadcasting, taking in Match of the Day 2, Channel 5's coverage of football, NFL and poker, fronting darts and snooker coverage for Eurosport and the BBC, and in the role he's now returned to as anchor of Five Lives Fighting Talk. He's also the honorary president of the UK Toronto Blue Jays fan club. Welcome, Colin Murray.
Thank you. I take that title. Absolutely, I'll take that title of honorary president of that, as long as I don't have to do any work.
Well, I mean, I know the guys who run the Blue Jays fan club over here pretty well. I think that anything that you can give them in terms of grace and favour, they'll be glad to take it.
No, it's good, you know, because it's a lonely experience being a baseball fan, certainly up until the last few years. Even more lonely being a Blue Jays fan over here. So it was nice to see that there was like over, I think it was over 300-400 poor souls out there.
I think there are maybe a few more than that. That's maybe just the ones who self-certify on Twitter, but we'll come on to them in a minute. So you've been following baseball for quite a long time, haven't you? So how did you first get into it? The story, I think, is quite well known, but for the sake of those who don't know it, it would be good to hear it again.
Yeah, exactly. I'll do it quickly. So basically when I was 18, which I'm 40 now, so going back 22 years, I was on a placement thing, basically to Toronto. So I was a young news reporter at the time. So I went to work for a newspaper there, and there was a crowd from Northern Ireland get taken in this government scheme to go and work in Canada. So it really kind of appealed to me because my grandfather, he was born Irish and died Canadian, if that makes sense. So he had a Canadian passport by then. So I jumped at the chance to get away to another part of the world, and I've been to France once at this stage of my life, so, you know, I hadn't really been anywhere far afield. So we went out there, and we had an allowance, and we got our accommodation paid for in an allowance, and it was very little, even back then. So my mate Stephen, he was brilliant at pool, and the local bar had a thing where whoever could clear the table quickest once a week got a £100 bar tab. So we'd go in there once a week, that's how we get it, which back then, that's a lot of booze. So
yeah.
We'd get that. And that would be our drinking money, and the Maple Leafs were the biggest show in town, always have been. And if ever there was an example of a team that aren't available to 99% of the community, at least it has to be them. You know, you couldn't get a ticket; it was like hen's teeth. And even if I couldn't afford it. And funny enough, that year it was over was when the Raptors started. So at this stage, I think they hadn't even started. They would have been 2 or 3 months away from their first ever game. Yeah. The only thing I could afford really was cheap beer and going up into the 500s at the Sky Dome and I'm watching baseball, and I soak in sport. You know, my generation grew up with grandstand where you at 12 o'clock you'd tune in, you'd already watched a wrestling and St. Greavesy and whatever else, and you would get, you know, a squash match where you hang your can, and then you'd get the first period of a Bracknell Bees hockey game. Then they go to the rugby league. Then they come back and show you the rest of the ice hockey, and then you get a horse race from Lingfield, you know, and it was that. So
you'd watch anything, basically.
Exactly. So I didn't go there as a Jays fan. I didn't go there as anybody had any knowledge of baseball outside of baseball films. Do you know what I mean? Bad News Players or whatever that you'd watch growing up. So, and it was just cheap, and I couldn't really go without watching live sport and soaking that in. So that is how I randomly ended up at the Sky Dome in Toronto watching baseball.
And how long did it take before it seeped into you, before you decided that, you know, this was something that was, you know, maybe not going to be the lifelong passion that it's turned out to be, but something that you wanted to spend more than the odd afternoon taking in?
Well, I think the romanticism was very quick. So that side of it hit me really quickly, just them preparing the diamond and, you know, the teams coming out and the pitcher walking to the bullpen, the starting pitcher with a backpack on. You know, that type of thing hit me straight away, that probably came from that kind of like Hollywoodization of baseball. And when I saw a home run being hit for the first time, it just unexpectedly took my breath away. And there's not many things in sport, like to this day, 22 years later, if I'm in a game and there's no such thing as a bad home run. Every single one makes me feel like a 4-year-old again. You know, it's this child, like, how can you with that little bit of wood hit that hard ball that's coming at you at 90 mile an hour, that distance? And it's something that no matter, if you and I did it, and we had a decent pitcher, you know, even we had a minor league pitcher. You and I are never hitting that home run in our lives. We could we could be there for years every day and we wouldn't hit it. So romantically, I got it, but it took me ages to get baseball. And it was after a few months I kind of worked out what the pitcher did. And once I got into that, as someone who just loves the stats of sport and loves the rules of sport, this chess game that was going on, and the dynamic change with every pitch, and the upper hand change with every pitch, and the pitch count controlled, I realised I was watching like field sports equivalent of chess. And I realised that whereas before they were long games and you look for hits, and I learned that wasn't the way to watch baseball, you know. And once I realised that, that's when it really clicked in as something I became passionate about, the sport rather than just like, you know, the romanticism of the whole thing.
Yeah, it's a strange thing, isn't it? And it does take a bit of time to understand that you're really looking for the times when people aren't hitting the ball at all. That's where the game's won and lost, really, on those fine margins. And it's a strange thing. Even as, you know, I'm a big cricket fan, and even I found that a bit of a thing that was took some time to get into. Just sort of arriving on that sort of thing a little bit, that romanticism that you touched on there. Another thing that you've said in the past is that you think that sort of baseball fans and British soccer fans are the polar opposite. And I think the games themselves sort of bear that out, although there's a lot of romanticism in both. I mean, I know you're a Liverpool fan, which is one of the most romantic football clubs there is in the UK. Why do you think that the football fans are so different? That's certainly my experience too.
I certainly think when you go to there's a reason why they call it the beautiful game, because most sport is based around set pieces. You talk about cricket and you've got a guy who will stand and position himself and there's no play going on, and you will strategize that set play, and you will do the same in American football. Is almost all set play. Sport is set play, apart from a fair few. You get less set plays in ice hockey and even more in football. If you think about it, set plays in football are only a means to an end. They're only a way to start the game again if the ball goes out of play. I mean, if someone had the idea of putting up nets rather than painted lines, might not even need those, you know. While they can be exciting, the game is fluid and beautiful. And when you watch football, it's all engrossing for a short period of time. Two bursts of 45 minutes, you know. Baseball needs an investment. You know, baseball is a very different thing. That's why people, I think, it's so different. Football is, you can understand, right? I can take someone who's never been to a football match and they get it. They might not understand an offside rule, but they'll get it. They can watch it and enjoy it. Basketball, you take an alien to basketball the day he landed and basically say, they're trying to get it into that net. They're trying to get it into that net. What would you say to a baseball fan? What would you say to an alien in a football match? He would go back to Mars, wouldn't he, by the time he played like the first 5% of the rules. So I think it's very different in sort of the amount of effort you have to put in. And here's the thing as well, right? See, I remember when American football burst in 85, it was quite easy to get, you know? Like, okay, four downs to get 10 yards and we can play it on our school pitch if anybody has any type of ball we can use. And gyms at schools randomly always had basketball nets. And, you know, you'd play it a couple of times, but the only experience of baseball you had growing up was like once or twice a year as an apology they'd play rounders, which is very little connection to baseball at all. And you would play it, nobody would understand the rules, the teachers couldn't be bothered to explain it if they even knew the rules. And you know, that's the difference. You fly into, say you're flying into Heathrow, right, you're flying into Manchester Airport, you look out the window and it's football pitches, rugby pitches, cricket pitches. You fly into New York, you fly in to an American city, and it's baseball diamonds, you know. I think that's why it's so difficult, because we don't play it when we're young. I get why people would go to baseball once and go, this is shite, you know. It does need a lot more investment than your first football match.
Yeah, I see that. And I guess that's maybe why the fans are they're tribal about the sport rather than about the team, aren't they? I mean, obviously they want their team to win, but over 162 games a year, you're going to lose some. And it's as much about the experience and as much about sharing that with people who share your passion, I think, aside from the States.
Aside from the Yankees, I always use them as the exception to the rule. The one place where if I go to watch baseball, it's the only place you ever have to consider where you're sitting and what you're wearing. I mean, Fenway Park, it was actually the greatest sports arena on the planet, greatest place to watch sport on the planet. I was there, was it season before last, or was it the start of last season, one or two? We swept them, season before last, and we swept the Red Sox, and I was sitting in the same place for three games, and just the only blue in a sea of red, and they were amazing. You know, I had like their season ticket holders taking pictures of me in front of the scoreboard, you know, holding up a broom. And they are very passionate. I mean, you could never say that Red Sox fans aren't passionate about their team. They live and breathe them. But when it finishes, when the 8.5 innings or the 9 innings are over, whoever wins, it just goes back to life. And I love that. And also the 162 games you mentioned, that's huge, because even the most ardent fans don't watch every game. It's the reason why it's called America's Game is it's a little bit like, in a way, it's kind of like your daily news shows and your daily, you know, the Late Show, or, you know, those type of shows that are on TV 5 nights a week. It's just there, and it doesn't feel right if it's not, you know. And nobody commits, very few people commit 20 hours a week to watch their team, you know. So it is very different, I think, than most sports in 162 game season. Like, I haven't even watched any preseason purely because, like, come on, I've got a hot, you know. If I watch a week for 6 months, and then on top of that, if we make touchwood postseason for 3 years in a row, like, that's a lot of commitment. I can't be doing the Grapefruit League as well. So I haven't even, I'll hit the subscription button in about 3 days, and then that's it. You know, sort of your social life goes out the window.
Yeah, I know how that feels. And trying to do a podcast on top of watching all of that, it starts to get difficult. So you, I believe, have actually visited all the ballparks, is that right?
No, not all of them.
Not all of them.
I'm sure quite a lot. So when I was there, when I was 18 and got into the baseball, I tried to go back most years. I couldn't manage it every year, especially sort of like the first 6 or 7 years. I didn't have the money really to fly to Canada to watch a baseball game, you know. But once I started earning a few quid, that kind of just became my holiday all the time. I would go over there. But I would always just go to the Sky Dome. You know, I never had I didn't want to go on the road. I loved Toronto, the city, and I had friends there and, you know, the same people, and I loved it. So it was only several years ago when I went, you know what, you need to go to other ballparks. You need to stop just, let's face it, the Sky Dome's, it's no Wrigley Field. So then I started to plan road trips, and I've got my way around about probably three quarters of them now, but I've still got a few to go to. I think, Fenway's my favourite by a mile. Probably Wrigley Field next. I'm not as big a fan of like AT&T and Camden Yards. It's kind of like, do you know if you see like an antique in a shop and you goes, oh, that's amazing antique.
Yeah.
And somebody goes, aye, we made it last year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So funny enough, I really like them. Like, especially like Camden. I love going to Camden Yards, but I actually really enjoyed really shitty places like Oakland, where they just can't believe you went. Like, they don't even have turnstiles. It's unbelievable. And I was there when the Golden State Warriors won the beat the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals, and they had it up on the big screen before the game. A couple of ex-Blue Jays playing that day. The Blue Jays weren't playing that night. I went. I love that. So each ground sort of delivers something different for you. But I've still got a few to do. I don't do the passport, by the way. I go round the grounds with a little kid's passport, getting it stamped.
Well, that's a blessed relief, to be honest. So just sort of focusing on the Blue Jays for a few minutes. The reason that you follow them is pretty clear. You were tied to Toronto at the age of 18 back in 1994. We mentioned at the top that they do have quite a strong following in the UK. Do you have any idea why that might be?
I don't know that they do.
Maybe just vocal, right?
I tell you why, because I never remember any Blue Jays tops in the street, any Blue Jays caps, absolutely nothing. And I started working in Fighting Talk. And it actually took about 6 months. I think you had Simon Cross on the show, the producer of Fighting Talk, who makes me look like nothing. He's the biggest nerd out there. God love you, having to have him for half an hour. I hope your podcast survived. But it took us. It was only one day he wore a Blue Jays cap, and I went, "Dude, you're not a Jays fan, are you?" And it was there was him, and there was me, and I met other baseball fans. I met Red Sox fans and Yankees fans and a few other randoms. There wasn't a lot of Blue Jays fans, and I think it's interesting you talked about that Twitter page, the UK Blue Jays. They're probably the real fans. I tell you what happened. I remember walking down the street and going, where are all these Blue Jays caps coming from? And I thought, it can't be, because this is like a year before we got back to the postseason for the first time since the lockout. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why is it? And the girl I was with, who I worked with, she was like, it's Drake. He wore it in a, wears it in photo shoots. And I'm like, right, so he's, because the Blue Jays, I think, might be the second highest selling merch now, miles behind the Yankees, but I think it's the second highest selling, and that's got to go down to him. And then on top of that, the last 2 years in the team, they're a team you can sort of really fall in love with. They've been so exciting to watch, you know. So I think it's probably a mixture of both, but I don't think, you know, maybe there's a few glory hunters who've been in hiding for 20 years coming out of the woodwork as well.
Well, yeah, I think that might be right. I was having a conversation with someone about why you see so much Braves merch, and I was positing a similar theory that it's all the hip hop scene down in Atlanta and in Georgia that's maybe where that's coming from. I think you might be right. Just on the Blue Jays, I understand you've actually met some of your heroes. I understand that Roy Halladay is a particular hero of yours.
He would be my all-time Jay, because when I started going, it was the year after the lockout, right? So baseball was at a terrible place when I started to go. And, you know, the first games I went to were empty stadiums, you know, like it was maybe 17,000, 18,000. And when this guy pitched, all of a sudden it was 30,000, 32, 35,000 in the stadium. And he was the first player I ever fell in love with, because all my back-to-back World Series means nothing to me because I didn't know baseball. So you go into my flat and there's a picture of Joe Carter, you know, the famous picture of Joe Carter, yeah, Signed on the wall. And, you know, I've rewatched it and I've lived it sort of in a revisionist way, but they're not my Blue Jays. It'd be a bit like if you were born in 1990. You can't really talk about Liverpool's first four European Cups, you know? And so it was, he was the first player I fell in love with, because he was absolutely genius. He was a fantastic player who rebuilt, actually, you know, the Blue Jays gave him that chance to rebuild his action, and he honoured it, and he stayed probably more than most would in that team. Because most years supporting the Jays, my thing was like, get out on holiday quick, because it's all going to be over by end of June. Like, we're not going to be competing by then, you know. And I saw Frank Thomas and Vernon Wells and at a different stage of the career, obviously. But he was the one. He was the box office, and you know, I interviewed him for a piece I did for the Guardian and why crazy people go to watch baseball, and I interviewed him, and I was waiting, and the press officer was with me, and I was sitting in the home dugout at Skydome, so I'm already losing my mind at this stage.
Yeah.
The guy goes to me, he's coming out in 5 minutes, he goes, do me a favour, will you? I was like, what? And he went, would you put your coat on? And I'm roasting, and I'm like, why? And he was like, you're wearing a Halladay shirt, and you're about dead. And I didn't even think, not the word, you know, sort of his name on my back. And he said, the guy's way too humble to, like, it'll freak him out. So I interviewed him. He was an absolute gentleman. He was wonderful and humble and insightful and attentive and all those things. And I think it's one of the few times, if not the only time, I don't support that many teams. I've narrowed them all down in the last sort of 10 years. I've kind of went, right, I support the Blue Jays because I've got that connection and I love it. Liverpool, I've got a connection to City and I love it. Belfast Giants ice hockey, connection to City, love it. And Northern Ireland and Ireland at the rugby, and that's my five, do you know what I mean? And this guy, yeah, this is the only time I think where a player went to another team and I physically wanted that other team to win. When he went to the Phillies, and he had great moments, of course, you know, perfect games and you know, got that acclaim he deserved. Like, the rest of baseball finally stopped writing him off as the Canadian guy, you know, the guy who played for the Canadian team. And it was brilliant what he did there. And I actively wanted to see that guy get a World Series. He so deserved a ring. But he to this moment is, you know, it's very easy to pick players over the last couple of years in the good times. But I think the day I die, I can't see anyone beating Roy Halladay, because he was the one ace, you know what I mean? He was the one guy that I saw him pitch and win Like, I think I saw him pitch a shutout or close to a shutout or a one-header at Yankee Stadium, do you know what I mean, with everyone baying for him. That was towards the end. I think it was the season before his last season, or maybe even his last season. I'll bore you all day talking about him, but to this day, I've got a signed Halliday jersey. And, yeah, it's kind of like, I think that's my pride and joy of all the daft things you collect in this job, you know, or in this passion.
Pivoting away from Roy Halliday and your all-time hero, how about the team for last year and this year? You must be feeling pretty confident.
I'm excited about the pitching rotation. I love Stroman. I'm a huge Stroman fan. He's got real balls and attitude, and you know, everything about him I really love. He's the right side of braggadocious. Do you know what I mean? I could see if you support another team, you'd think he was just cocky, but I think he's got this beautiful confidence. And you put alongside him, I think Estrada's pitching opening day. He'll pitch.
Yeah, he is.
And Hap, and Liriano, and I like our, and it gets better every year. So that's a real positive. But I think there's a few blinkers on thinking that we can go into this season with Bautista a year older, having to stay fit. I love the fact he twinged his back all in pre-season and was like, I'm fine, everything's great. He's facing the tide of time. That's why it's a one-year deal. That's why we were able to get him again. You know, he wasn't snapped up by everyone. Mm. And I hope to God we see Vintage Bautista. You're replacing it. No one's replaced Edwin, and I love the idea that it's Morales. Irreplaceable for me. His agent needs to have a word with himself. He had a 3-year deal at the same money as he got when he's went to the Indians. So I think they're going to win the World Series, by the way. But he's went to the Indians. He's got 2 years at the same money as we were giving him for 2 years, and an option for a third. He's not going to get the option, given his age. Not going to get. He could have stayed with us, and if he stayed with us, I think it would have been a different kettle of fish. But do you know what? I thought last year we were a little short, and I think we finished roughly where I thought we would finish, even with a high expectation. And I think the year before that, we finished roughly where I thought we were going to finish. You know, I think we are a team that you're capable of making postseason again this year, but are we better than the Indians? No. Are we better than the Red Sox and paper going into this season? No. You know, switch over to the National League. Are we better than the Cubbies? No. Are we better than the Mets? I think that's arguable. So I think, you know, it's Cleveland for me be the team this season in the AL. The problem is if they lose an ace, then their pitching's maybe not as strong in depth as us. I mean, it was interesting in the last two seasons because our bats carried us one season, and then this season just gone by, our pitching was getting us through. And you know what, that wild card game is the best game I've ever been to, because we talk about football and baseball being so different. That was one day in that city where they had to win. You know, you got game fives and game sevens and they're like hen's teeth, but you had this game, this wild card game. Everyone woke up in the morning and Toronto felt like FA Cup town. You know, there was no tomorrow if you didn't win, and that's alien to baseball, really. Because you only have it when a playoff game goes to the last game. You know, they rarely come along. That was amazing. And Edwin's with 3-run homer walk-off. Oh, that was that night was amazing. So I think, you know, it's interesting that you look at the division first. There's a lot of Yankees players, the sort of baby bombers, that all have to improve at the same time. Logic would say that they'll not all deliver. So I could see us back in the wild card this year. Yeah, I hope we win the division. But I'm certainly not going to this season expecting to win the World Series. I don't think so. I think with Bautista, I'm rambling a bit. I think our pitching's even better this year by virtue that the young guys are a year older, and the young guys are still developing. I think that we got a great closer, and he again, you know, getting better and better. He's going to be an ace this season, so I'm not worried about that. And the player I trust least has left. Brett Cecil, he gives me nightmares, that guy, right? Every time. I got my brother into baseball a couple of years ago, and he lives in the States now, so he gets to watch baseball. And he just, every time, he's like, Cecil pitching, game over. But our bats aren't as strong as last year, and last year we weren't quite strong enough. So I don't. Do you think logically we should, the Jays, you've got to look at them as a dark horse, right?
I would think so. I mean, I'm slightly biased. I am a Red Sox fan, so I've got to be careful what
That's
I say.
The difference between Red Sox fans and Jays fans, right? I've just given a level-headed, right, unbiased opinion. I've said the Red Sox are the best team in our division this year, and you can't even admit the Jays are right there.
I think you're good. I think your rotation is absolutely outstanding. I think Osuna, who you mentioned, is completely lights out. I don't know about Morales. I mean, he's not Edwin, but then who is? But I think he might surprise a few people. He gets on base a lot. He maybe doesn't hit as many home runs, but yeah, might be getting that production in a slightly different way. I think they're the team that the Red Sox will need to beat to win the East. I think the Orioles will for me fade and hit a lot of home runs. The Rays will probably be a bit better, and the Yankees, I hope not.
we always hope not. We always hope not when it comes to the Yankees.
I wanted to ask your opinion on Rob Manfred's quest to change baseball. He thinks for the better, but I wondered if you agree with, you know, taking out intentional walks, putting runners on the bases and things, and even, you know, obviously further down the line, he wants to bring games over here. Do you have any thoughts on any of those things?
Yeah, I do. I think, listen, small changes that make a game better, I'm interested in. I think baseball's got to be very careful. I think it's got to hold its nerve a bit. You know, it's interesting today. We're coming through a generation that wants everything quicker, faster, now. I went out today and I walked a mile across London, and I went into five different shops, one of them hugely mainstream, one of them a store that went to the wall that's now opening again, and a couple of independent stores and another one quite well known, and bought vinyl in all of those places. This was the thing that apparently was dead. People didn't want to listen to vinyl anymore. People just wanted to download music and get it straight away. And all of a sudden, vinyls had this revival. Not to what it was, obviously, but it's independent record stores are more buoyant than they probably have been the last 5, 6, 7 years. And, you know, I think you'll be careful with fads and fashion. And I think you've got to credit people with a little bit more intelligence as well. You know, some of the things you hear about drastic changes to baseball just change the game completely. And I'm all for changes that make the game better, but I think they've got to be careful. You know, I use your Red Sox assay as an example. You know, look at what the Blue Jays did, the Sky Dome. Everyone was rushing to build stadiums like that, and every one of them's a virtual white elephant now. And
yeah,
you know, and you look at teams who have left and built super stadiums who are now suffering from that. You know, they don't have that history of where they were. They're not as tough to play in those places anymore. And your Red Sox had the discussion. I mean, they nearly left Fenway Park, as other teams did leave great baseball grounds to build these monstrosities, and you didn't, and you stayed. And there's no other place in the world, commercially, I reckon, as well, you know, that people would want to go and watch baseball. You know, it's the number one choice. They did that by staying where they were and developing. So I think it's very important that baseball's not a fad. It's America's game. It's got a history that goes right back almost as far as the country itself. So, you know, don't the times change. The times are changing all the time. And I just hope it doesn't dumb down, because baseball, as I said, I think it's the closest thing you get to chess in a field. And I don't want that to go. Intentional walk should, you know, an intentional walk is nothing like an intentional walk to get you swearing.
And what about London? Do you think that's going to happen?
Yeah, I'd say before 2020. I mean, I don't know. But, like, you know, you talk to people and you get little inside sort of nods and stuff. But I'd imagine it will. I think it'll face a tougher challenge than basketball and American football has, purely going back to what I bored you with earlier about, you know, people understanding it and there not being that many diamonds, et cetera, et cetera. But I think we'll all sort of club together, you know. I'm going, you'd go, that's two seats.
So yeah,
they're guaranteed sales in that fund. But I think it will be. I think it's just, it's what they do. They look to expand the brand. The precedent is there for them taking it to other places, to Australia, to Japan, and the European market. I think they'll come to Europe before 2020, and the odds-on place, I would imagine, would be England. I'd love to see them look. Do you know what? John Hanks, I know there's a guy who wants to bring it to Entry.
Okay.
Put a proposal together, and he sent it to the MLB, and he sent it to MLB UK. And I thought, when I was told about it, I thought, sounds a bit pie in the sky. And I looked through the proposal, and it was brilliant. you know, because you don't really think about it. Because the thing is, it can't be in a football ground because they're not, they want it to look like baseball. And actually,
yeah,
if you look at those big race course grounds, they've got two huge stands on an on a sort of 15, 20 degree angle. So actually set up really well. But I, and it'd be fantastic because if they bring baseball here, that's just more people that will say to me, just fat people playing rounders. God, could you imagine when it comes here, the amount of, because baseball's like tattoos, do you know what I mean? Like, if you've got one, you don't care. And if you don't have one, you seem to get upset by it. I don't even bother anymore. I'm just like, look, if you want to learn about baseball, I'll talk to you for an hour. And we'll talk through rules, and we'll talk through what makes it magic to me, and then you make your own mind up. But fat guys playing rounders, you're just like, most sports are valid, and I remember I used to think Formula One's the worst sport ever, and I still don't like it, but I learned about it from a friend, and I kind of get it now, you know? And you know, it's like people, you said you're a cricket fan, people that don't get test matches, what's the point then in draws? Do you know what I mean? Like, you have to, if a sport's popular, it's valid. You just have to learn about it, you know, and then decide whether you like it.
I totally agree with you on that general sentiment and on Formula One. Just sort of lastly, before we wrap it up, I wanted to bring together your passion for music and your Canadian baseball obsession with a little bit of fighting talk thrown in. So I'm going to name a Canadian musician or artist, and I want you to respond with the first baseball thing that comes into your head. Now, that could be a club, it can be a player, it can be an item on a baseball field. So right, so the first one is Neil Young.
Golden Glove.
Oh, I like that. I was going to say the Reds, because even though he's Canadian, everyone thinks he's Midwestern and he's a bit heritage.
Well, you see, the thing with Canada is that I'm married into a Canadian family, and the Canadian people, there's no quality control. It doesn't matter whether you're the Bare Naked Ladies or Neil Young. If you're Canadian, Canadian people point out to you that that person's Canadian. If you're watching a film and it's Jim Carrey, that every time he's Canadian, you know. They're so proud of everybody that comes from Canada. So Neil Young, you've started high, by the way. There's nowhere to go from Neil Young.
I'm going to try. What about Leonard Cohen?
Do you know what popped? I'm just going to say popped into my head straight away, right?
Go on.
Edwin's walk-off home run in the wild card game, because the first thing came into my head was hallelujah.
I love it.
Straight away, just go to that euphoria. And so it's terrible, terrible choice, but there you go.
Well, I was on similar lines. I had the Padres because of the sort of the religious links and the Southern California links as well.
I must tell you this, right? So when I got married, it wasn't an Orthodox wedding at all, right? Loads of things going on. But one of the things that I had was an Alomar jersey hanging in the church. So it was hanging beside the minister in the church was an Alomar jersey, and the girl that married us wore an Angels top.
Love it. Brilliant. Celine Dion.
Again, just being honest, the things that popped into my head, I thought of like the worst time to be a Blue Jays fan, which was probably about 6 years ago. That was tragic, and her music's tragic. So I kind of immediately thought of bad things, and it took me to terrible, terrible Blue Jays. Maybe if it wasn't that was probably exactly what I would go for.
Yeah, I went for AJ Pierzynski. Makes a lot of noise. It's awful. Godspeed You, Black Emperor.
What a band! Saw them at the Empire Music Hall in Belfast. Supported by Sigur Rós.
Wow, what a gig.
What about that? What a gig that was. Funny enough, like, you couldn't tell when they were on stage and when they weren't, you know what I mean? They didn't put the house lights down or anything.
No.
But it was a good gig. Like, I was into all that. Godspeed, You Black Emperor. I'll go a random one here, right?
Yeah.
You caught me at one. I forgot they were even Canadian. I'm going to go with Mariano Rivera, because I interviewed him making a documentary in the Yankees, which was bizarre. And he's one of the greatest sports people I've ever met. So here I am now talking nice things about the Yankees. But I met so many people from the history, and I met Derek Jeter, And he didn't want to be there for the 2 minutes he allowed me to chat to him. And I was told I had 5 minutes with Mariano Rivera. And at the time, he was going into what he thought was his last. It was actually at the Steinbrenner Stadium in Tampa at spring training, which he assumed would be his last spring training, his last Grapefruit League. And he talked to me. That took me for 5 minutes. He talked to me for 35 minutes. And Godspeed reminds me of him, because he was always a lot of his answers would go back to his faith and sort of what he took up onto the mound, and he's a big religious guy. So, and he blew me away. He was such an amazing guy. So I'll say him.
And he went on for a long, long time as well.
Well, he's the last one to wear Jackie Robinson's number, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
I thought that little kid would go on that long.
Yeah, we've got a couple more. Arcade Fire.
Arcade Fire. Wow. Arcade Fire, technically mainly an American band with one guy from Canada. That's my music nerd coming out rather than the baseball nerd. Because it's only the main guy, isn't it? It's Canadian. There might be one other in that band. Okay, so I will go for... Dad, literally just go for the first thing come into my head.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. First thing come into my head was, again, after the wildcard game, all the cars not moving and everyone hanging out of their cars and going absolutely batshit crazy. And I'd never seen it to that level in Toronto. That's that kind of, like, you know, post big win euphoria. People in the streets kissing each other, getting naked. You know, it was absolute pandemonium. And you can now tell me what the Arcade Fire link is. We'll test your knowledge.
Is it keep the car running?
No cars go.
No cars go. Oh yeah, well, there we go. I rather more prosaically went for Jacoby Ellsbury, because like Arcade Fire, we've seen nothing out of him since 2013.
Very good.
Yeah, there you go. Red Sox basher.
Very serious live Arcade Fire. They used to be a mad fun live, and then they went for more like videos and cameras on their heads and got all a little bit pretentious. So I'm with you in that front.
Last couple.
I got a train to get to Manchester to do.
All right. Well, I won't detain you much longer.
Just come on again. I haven't even told any of my Yankee stories.
Well, we can come back. We can have you on to talk about the Yankees again. So the last two, first one, Michael Bublé.
God, that's unbelievable. Michael Bublé. Do you know, I had to go and see Michael Bublé because his co-songwriter is Canadian and knows my wife. And we had to go along to that gig. And after the gig, we went back for drinks in his hotel. And he had boats waiting in the River Thames at the O2, taking straight to his hotel. It's the only time I felt like Don Johnson in Miami Vice. Okay, so Michael Bublé, I'll go with Joey Bats. Much smaller in real life.
I like that. I had AJ Preller because he thinks he's in the Rat Pack.
I told you you'd be terrible at this, didn't I?
No, I quite like yours. And lastly, I think this is a bit of a gimme, Drake.
Does it have to be baseball?
No.
Well, no, it makes me think straight away Serena Williams, because my mate was looking after the tennis players backstage at Wimbledon. And he was with her, although he wasn't doing press or anything, so I don't think it was knowledge he was there. But when she last won Wimbledon, he was with her out the back. And my mate said it was very bizarre, just hanging out with Drake, waiting, because I think they're good friends or whatever. Who's Drake make me think of?
It's got to be Marcus Stroman, surely. Mr. Toronto, Brogadoccio, everything.
Kinda. I think I'd rather wear a Stroman baseball cap than wear a Drake one.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Well, I think that's probably the right place to wrap it up. There were a few more, but we'll leave on a high point.
I told you, we were messaging each other and we were DMing each other before this, and he goes, "I'm going to do a quiz." I was like, "I will be awful at it. I always am." Terrible at those.
Well, you're the presenter. You're not the guy who has to come up with the answers quickly, are you?
Well, listen, thanks for chatting to me. I would chat for another hour, but I've a 9 o'clock train to Manchester to do Countdown, and I've got 12 minutes to get there, thanks to you. So,
right, well, I hope you make it.
Again, just as long as it's not with Simon Cross.
All right, well, we'll definitely make sure that we don't have you on together, or it'll be like the critics from the Muppets. All right, thanks a lot, Colin, and hopefully we'll have you again soon.
Cool, take care.
Cheers, bye.